So I've been looking forward to this gentleman coming from Pasco to speak here. I've heard him many occasions, and I really admire this guy. Let's welcome Al from Pasco.
I'm Al, alcoholic. I don't think anyone have any problems hearing me. I'm feeling good. I'm excited. I'm just like Francine. I mean, enthused, feeling good, refreshed, or whatever. But anyway, I want to. It's good to be here tonight. I want to thank Vicky for inviting me. I want to thank Gus for recruiting me. And welcome to the newcomers. Welcome to everybody here, years of sobriety, whatever. I'm not going to try to be boring, so newcomers, don't let me run you off if I say something. You know, I was a newcomer at one time, and oh, I know I was. I was very judgmental in my first meeting, you know. Like I say, I'm an alcoholic. I'm a book thumper. I will not thump the book that much. I'm also, and I'll show you why, I'm a God freak. And I'll be casual with God, too. So that's because I said that. I'm letting you know, I don't want you to get up and leave and say, oh, he's going to go talk about this or whatever, you know. Because the reason I do this because, no, I'll get to that later. I'll be all over, and I tell you what, I'll be all over the board. I'll probably hit some Drunkalog, and then I'll hit some Big Book, and then I'll hit a Step or whatever. So I'll be all over the place. I'm letting you know that, too. So I won't be on one little area with a Drunkalog going on and on and on, and I won't be saying, the Big Book says, bloop, 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 bloop. They didn't give you an explanation of all that. Because we all, you know, we all do sobriety in our own way. You know, we learn from each other, and that's what we hear from. You know, especially, you know, we say newcomers is the most important person in the room. Yes, they're important. Also, people with years of sobriety, I don't care. It's just everybody's important to me in Alcoholics Anonymous because Alcoholics Anonymous is very important to me. People, I drank for 35 years, and I tried to stay stopped the last 5 years, and I could not stay stopped. And the doctor told me, you're dying. You have 3 years at the max to live. Anyway, I'll get back to that. But, okay, youngest out of nine. Beautiful family. Beautiful mother. Beautiful father. All of my siblings, we got along good. Girls, I mean, you know, I'll have to tell you, I was born at the right time. And I don't know, everything just seemed, it wasn't all golden, but somehow the way I was taught to fit into different things, you know. I had my brothers to back me up, and I had my sisters to back me up, and I had my father to back me up, and I sure had my mother to back me up. And no alcoholic house. My parents were not alcoholic. They were Southern Baptists. I was made to go to church every day. I participated in the little Christmas programs and the little New Year's programs. You know, I say my little speech and the elders or whoever said amen and all that kind of stuff. So I was raised in that. Now, I took my first drink at 14 years old. I had to get out of going to church. My whole life was drinking. Man, this was something. Well, and I'll share this with you. I had three brothers to die from alcoholism. My sisters were not drinkers, but my three brothers, and I don't know, somehow I never paid attention to them drink. I was around them. But it was this Christmas holiday that my dad always, he wasn't a drinker. My mother wasn't a drinker. My aunts and uncles weren't drinkers. And I had about 15, 20 of them. And none of them were drinkers. But My dad would always buy, during the Christmas season or New Year's season, people would stop by, and my dad would always buy a fifth of wild turkey and a gallon of Morgan David wine so that my mother could soak those old nasty fruit cakes. I don't know about those things. And by the way, I'm going to tell you, I mean, you know, I talk loud, but I kind of move around a little bit. I'm not, you know. And it's because I was a teacher at one time, and I used to lecture quite a bit. But anyway, one Christmas, they were entertaining in the front, and the Morgan David and the wild turkey was in the kitchen. And I was there, and I was in the kitchen with the Morgan David and the wild turkey. So, you know, I said, well, I'm going to try this wild turkey. So I got a Coke, and I poured a little bit of the Coke out, and then I poured the wild turkey in there, and I went back on the service porch. And I drank it, and that was pretty good. I drank it, and I went to sleep. Now, my mind, I'm 14. Oh, my brothers. My dad had this big workshop in the back of the house. Oh, my brothers come over every weekend, and they detail their cars, and they work on their cars, and they bring cooler with beer in it. And their friends come over, and they have, I've got to get to that cooler. So I start hanging around these brothers on the weekends, you know. And so I've stashed some beer. There's a wooded area in the back. I've stashed me a beer. And I probably would, well, and when I'm turning back, I'd probably sip it or whatever. Okay. I'm playing football in junior high. I need money because I need to drink. Now, I'm going to get out of church with this money, with this money thing. I'm plotting on this thing. My daddy was a workaholic. And if you worked, my daddy was crazy about you. He would love to put you to work. If you was around my daddy, you were going to do some work. I don't care how you come up, boy, I'm telling you, he was that type of person. And you know, it was great because it was learning. I got basic work skills, you know, all these work habits and all these type of things because he showed me how to use the wrench, how to use the shovel, how to use the hammer, and he never threw it at me if I used it wrong and say, stupid, you know, he never called me that or downgraded me or anything. And to tell you the truth, anybody else better not downgrade me either when it comes to my dad. My dad would get in your stuff when it comes to you messing with his children. My dad did. I thought, one time I had the police come after me to arrest me on a warrant at the house, and my dad had told the police, come busting in the house. He told the police, he said, look here, let me tell you one thing. This is my house. I'll bring my son out to you. But you don't come in here taking over my house. And the police, you know, they kind of submit. So he brought me out to him. And this really brings tears to my eyes. My dad asked the police not to handcuff me. So the police had me hold the dashboard of the car. We went down to the police station, and my dad was right behind the police car. Bailed me out. He was that type of individual. But anyway, this was later on, but I drank all through high school and didn't get any trouble or anything. And I don't know how I made it out of high school. It shows me, if you looked at my high school transcript or my college transcript, I don't know how I graduated or whatever. You know, I think I was number 92 out of 125 or something like that, you know. Because I was drinking. I had me a little old car. I had put me a little car together. Man, I was doing it. You know what I mean? I'm wearing those J.C. Penney shirts, two for $5. I'm sharp. Levi jeans, Chuck Taylor All-Stars, you know, all that kind of stuff, high tops and low tops, you know, Cordovas, and man, I'm sharp. I got it together, and I got money in my pocket, you know, and I'm sharp. And so now this is the money thing. I'm going to tell you about the money, you know. I had to get some money because I like to drink. Now, I'm not saying this to anybody to feel sorry for me, but it's part of my story. I was raised in the South, and that was plenty racism. There were no jobs in the black side of town. I want a job. I went over to the white side of town, and I went to the biggest food market over there, and I told the guy I want a job. And he hired me. So after school, I went to work. I had you know, they gave tips then. You know, they gave quarters and dimes and all this kind of stuff. Plus, I don't even know how much I was making an hour, but, man, I was getting over, man. I was doing it. I had everything going for me. So, you know, I'm pretty popular with everybody. And so what happened was I got this job. And somebody complained, and I worked, my dad always told me to work. I told you about my daddy and them work habits and them work skills. Always taught me to work. My daddy, I got fired. They say business was slow. And I'm looking at the manager, I'm like, somebody said they didn't want my black hands on their grocery.
Oh, wow.
They complained. I come home and I told my daddy. My daddy say, son, let me tell you one thing. Sometimes it's just like that. I went to school. Man, I'm missing out. I'm making about $40 a week. Man, that's big money. I'm in high school back in '60s, you know? So I can't, the second day I'm missing to my dad, said, boy, let me tell you one thing. He said, I told you just like that. If you don't like it, I'll tell you what you do. You go up there after school and you go in that man's office and you tell that man he was wrong for firing you. I walked in that office. I pulled my little old 56 Chevrolet up there, you know. I walked in there and I said, Horace, you know, when you fired me the other day, I said, you were wrong. He said, you want to start back to work now? Gave me my job back. I held that job from probably the ninth grade up until I graduated out of high school. During that time when I was going through that, man, I went to college where my brothers were, and they partied when I was in high school. I went to visit my brothers one day. I got to go to college. Somehow I got to graduate out of high school, and I got to go to college, man. Man, they do it up there on the weekend. So, I graduated out of high school. And my daddy liked that. My daddy was one of these people, get you some education. You was going to get a high school education, and you was going to try college one year. And if you didn't make it in college, my dad going to put your butt to work. So my dad was a longshoreman. He worked on the waterfront down there in Galveston, Texas. So what he'd do is I'd go to college through the week, and I had a car. I'd better have my butt at home on Friday because I'm going to be on that waterfront on Friday night. I'm going to work Friday, and boy, we make $5 an hour then back in '68. That's big money. I worked at Friday for 4 hours. I worked all day Saturday. After I got off on Friday night, I go drink that whiskey. Though. You know, I had that money on Friday. Go drink that whiskey, work all day. Get there at 7 o'clock on Saturday morning, work all day Saturday morning, go back for 4 hours on Saturday, in between drinking that whiskey. Yeah, drinking that whiskey, and you go back in the evening and work till 4 hours till 11 o'clock at night, come right out of there, take a shower. What do? Go right out that door and go to them clubs and drink that whiskey. Flunked out of college. Drank my way right out of college, boy. You get it? Anyway, how you doing, Angel?
Fine.
Good seeing you, man. I ain't seen you in a long time. I think about you all the time. But anyway, my parents would never check my grades. I'd always beat the mailman on home getting my grades. And so got enrolled in another school. I don't know how I got enrolled in another school. Enrolled in college again, and then drank myself out of that one. Went on academic probation, and I dropped out. It sure hurt my dad, though. It hurt him because I dropped out a semester. I dropped out, said I was going to go back in February or January or whatever. Got drafted. They were drafting me. Christmas Eve, 1968. Greetings. You are hereby inducted into the armed service of the United States. I remember the name of the raid, Mr. LCM Thrash. The name was head of the draft board. At the bottom, it was typed with in red. Do not miss this bus.
Yeah.
Now, in between this, I got married. I was married back in, you know, before, and I got married, and now I'm going to leave my family. I just got married. Boom. Got drafted. Went into service. Me and the wife, communication wasn't, you know, up to par. So I decided, hey, if the communication ain't up to par, I'm in survival mode now. I mean, I hope things are good when I get back, but, you know. Went to Vietnam, I went in survival mode. No communication with her. No communication. And see, God is a very important part of my life. I tell you why. I was in Vietnam 2 months. My aunt passed away, and my grandmother passed away at my aunt's funeral. My mother told the Red Cross that my grandmother raised me. They gave me a leave from Vietnam. I got a leave from Vietnam for 15 days. I took 45. Check that. I went on the waterfront, started working on the waterfront as a longshore. And my dad said, boy, you got to go back. My dad made me go back. I came to Oakland, the ship out of Oakland. I'm in my alcoholism. I stayed around Oakland, and then my uncle told me in Oakland, you got to go back, boy. I went back. I knew I'm going to get busted. I walk into my company. The company commander sits for me. I'm saying, oh, man, I'm going to get busted. I walk in, salute him. He says, is everything all right at home? I said, yes, everything. He says, that's all. If you need something, let me know. Got promoted. Hey, man, got promoted about 3 months later. Got me some Sergeant Stripes. You know? Man, I'm telling you. And then after I got to Vietnam, I was crazy and all that because I started dropping them pills and started drinking that alcohol, ended up in jail. You know, and my daddy was spending money on lawyers and all this kind of stuff. I mean, it just went on and on. It was unlimited. Alcohol, you know how it goes. You guys know all about it. But anyway, as goes on, I got a felony beef. And I said I wasn't going to go to jail anymore when I walked out with that felony beef because they put me in probably an 8-man cell, and it was 11 of us or so, and everybody, this is my first felony, I'm in county jail, and everybody in there are parole violators, and these guys are happy. And I want to get the hell out of here. Man, these guys are happy. They're going back to prison. And they telling me, man, don't sweat it. You're going to be all right, and you're all right. And, man, they making these donuts and heating up coffee. And man, y'all know what I'm talking about. Man, I'm playing cards with the missing. And I'm like, how do you do? Man, these guys are having fun. Saving the coffee and heating it up at night, you know. I'm like, man, what these guys have? So anyway, my dad sent a lawyer. The lawyer said he was going to come and get me, that my dad was coming to get me, but he didn't want me released until he gets there. So I had to spend a whole week there, you know, wang. And man, these guys start, I had a good mattress. These guys start bribing me with candy balls for my mattress, and I made it. I left out of there. This is the truth. I'm going to tell you something. I left out of there. I said, I am not. I said, something came to me, and it was a vision. It said, you know one thing? Every time you drop them pills and drink alcohol, you wake up in jail. I said, now we're talking about 1972 or something like that. I said, I'll never drop them pills again. But I kept drinking alcohol, and I didn't. And I wouldn't, as the years go on, I was functioning. I wasn't getting any tickets. I'd go to jail every now and then, but back there in that county, see, they charge you what you had in your pocket. They didn't charge you with no DWI, what they call them, because DWI was a felony. And what happened, the judge and the police would keep your money. And one time they locked me up. And this was before I got to felony the beach, but they locked me up, and I had about $300 in my pocket, and they was going to keep my $300. I went and got me a lawyer, paid them $35, and went there and got my money back and paid the lawyer $35, and the lawyer told me don't ever get caught in this county again. And that's for sure. But anyway, there were times I was supposed to go to jail. I didn't go to jail. I was just as guilty as the other people around me, but there was something about me. I've had handcuffs put on me. They've taken me down. They didn't have computers then, thank God. They would take me down. I just hadn't been arrested in that county. And they would take me down, And most of the time, you know, I was a good dresser, so, you know, bling, bling. And the people were like me. They weren't real, you know, groomed or whatever. And I said, I don't even know them guys. I was just there, and I was looking for a restroom. And they say, and plus, let me tell you one thing. I was functioning, and I had good jobs. I was working for some of the major chemical companies and oil companies and all that stuff. I always kept me a good job because I was broke one time. You see, that's one thing about me. I never will be broke again. I was broke one time, and I was eating green beans. I was hemmed up. The police was looking for me, and somebody took me to an apartment and deserted me. A friend of mine, he didn't come back. I didn't know where I was, but there were green beans and beets and all kind of stuff. And I was eating that for breakfast and trying to, you know. But I hustled up enough money to give me some Thunderbird. You know, but it went on and went on, and so this thing goes on, and I'll get to this Alcoholics Anonymous is amazing though. You know, I went through that. I quit jobs before they fired me because I knew they were going to fire me. The union was good then, and it was hard to fire you or whatever. But it went on, and so during this time, I'm sitting on Skid Row in L.A. and I'm about to drink, and this little piece of paper comes down the street. I was catching the bus to go out on probably 130 and Grape out there in Watts, 35th and Central, 52nd and Ascot. Now, I used to drink on the corner. You could drink on the corner then. But this little piece of paper came and lodged up under my foot. I was on Skid Row, living in Skid Row. And I looked at it, and it had a four service people, somebody from the Air Force, the National Guard, and somebody from Army and the Air Force or whatever. And I just picked it up, and it told me about GI benefits. And I looked at it, and I went through the brochure, and it told me how much I was going to get for going to school. Damn. I got on the other side of the street, and I caught the bus to the college. Went to admission. I'm back in college. I'm continuing my college education. So what do? I get with the veterans on the campus. We drink. I don't know how I finished college. My transcript is horrible. I'm ashamed to show it to anyone. But as time goes on, I get married again and everything. And now, I got this felony beef. You remember, I had this felony beef. I was in Texas when I got that. And when I left Texas, probation was revoked on me. I came to California to live out the statute of limitations. It wasn't a capital crime, so you had a statute of 7 years, set the statute of limitation on it. I pick up the paper. They got job openings in the Department of Corrections for California. I'm saying, damn. Why not? I'm active in alcoholism there now. I'm telling you this. I went in through the back door. I said, well, I go in as a cook. They were looking for cooks. I went in as a cook. They hired me, but on that application, there were some questions about your background that I knew. I said, hey, man, you know, I'm still active in alcoholism. Man, I better not. Damn, I don't know. Well, I'm to hell with it. I'm here now. They hired me. God, check this out. And I knew it because I prayed about a lot of things. You know, I was still praying. I was taught to pray and all that, but not meditate, pray. 3 years later, they called me in and said, hey, you lied on your application. They say, you've been convicted of a felony. Here I am working for the Department of Corrections as a cook, and they said, you've been convicted of a felony. And I said, I know. I thought that was expunged. What else is there to say now? So, but you know, I think the statute of limitations was up then, but they didn't tell me what the felony was. They just said, not convicted. So there's three people over there. They, them big shots, they just, blah, blah. I said, wait just a minute. Now I'm pissed off. Let me know what I'm saying this to myself. Let me know because I'm going to get the hell out of here and I want to go take me a drink. That's exactly what's on my mind. So I told him, I said, look, I appreciate if you could do something for me, but if you can't, let me know, and I'll leave. I want to go take a drink. I loved alcohol, people. I loved alcohol. Y'all know what it is when you love alcohol. I worked and kept money in my pocket so I could buy alcohol. And I was the same thing. Don't bug me about my drink. Huh, here's your half a pint. I'm going over here and drink mine. Leave me alone. I'll buy you a drink. But you know one thing? I was in alcohol so much, you couldn't buy me a drink. It's probably a shame, because if you did buy me a drink, I'd probably drink up all of it. Man, I wanted to drink. I wanted money in my pocket so I could drink. I'm functioning, you know. So I buy you whatever, get out of my way so I could drink. I was the type of person. But anyway, it went on. What they did was they looked at me. I just had this thing into me, you know. I don't know. I'm survival mode. They said, write down what you told us. Turn it into the investigation tomorrow. 25 years later, I walked out of there retired. Never heard anything for it. So now I'm in the Department of Corrections. I said, you know what? Damn. I think they had a opening in education. I said, I think I will go. Wow, I qualify. I got the degree. I got this here. But I got to get a credential from the state of California. I went and got the job, and all this for a year, I swear it. I got a temporary condition because they had some hell of a questions on there about your background, your criminal history, you know what I mean? And I just said no. And they gave me a temporary, and then a year later, they gave me a clear one. So there I am in the prison, supposed to have been in prison. Back in Texas, I had one foot on a banana peel and the other one in Huntsville prison. Here I am in a prison teaching. I had good rapport with the inmates. I was well liked with the inmates. I wasn't a correctional officer. I was a teacher, you know. And the guys just enjoyed being in my class because they weren't learning much, but... Okay, at the end, I'll get to this. At the end, all this drinking. And I never knew what a resentment was until I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. Anyway, all this stuff, man, it got to the point where I don't know why my friends stopped coming over drinking with me. But there I was alone. And I had an RV in the backyard. So I was spending time in the RV and staying away from the house while the family was. Looking at the house, hating the family. Because here I am, I'm hardworking and nobody appreciates me. And the doctors tell him, I would just go down to the hospital and just check myself in, man. I was scared. I had heart palpitations, and I had pain in my liver, and my liver was bad. And my brothers had died before me, so I was going through the same thing. That it was going to be me. And they put me in a rehab. I knew nothing about rehabs and recovery and all that stuff. But anyway, they put me there. But they put me in a drug rehab. And I was there for about three. Man, those guys were, I was staying awake from them guys. Them guys had dog glasses on. Them guys were searching in weeds. They were tweaking. They were doing all kind of things. Well, one of the counselors took note of me, I guess. And I wouldn't even get in the van and go to meetings with them. I'd walk to the meeting all by myself, you know. And one of the counselors called me in. Well, three of them. It was a doctor, a counselor, and a social worker. I don't know. But I was at a table just like that, and they were there, and I was over here where June is right here. And they said, you don't belong here. Well, hell, I know I didn't belong there.
Yeah.
You don't tell me that. I got a mortgage. I got... three cars. I work hard every day. So they said. And when they told me that, guess what the hell they told me? You need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh, shit. Are they crazy? Alcoholics Anonymous. So they sent me home. When I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I had about 60 days of sobriety. Now, that's two things I'll never forget. Okay. The Christmas holidays of 96. I sent my family away. I had the house. It was a wet Christmas. I had plenty of firewood. I had plenty of alcohol. I damn near drank myself to death. Nobody to stop me from doing what I want to do. You know, house with two bathrooms in it, I'm scared to get in and take a shower. Because I think my family's gonna come home and find me in the shower dead. Blood pressure high, eyes red, I'm puking all over the place. I'll never forget that last drunk, people. Never forget that last drunk. I came in and I haven't been out. That was, you know, like I said, my sobriety date is January 3rd, 1997, and I haven't had a drink since. Anyway, thank God the doctor was open January 2nd. I called the doctor. I went in. He looked at me. He says, "You're killing yourself." And that's when they sent me to rehab, and then rehab put me out, and I walked the streets of Atascadero for 2 months. Finally, I got a schedule from somewhere. I sneaked into the meeting while the meeting was going on or something. I got a schedule, and I didn't drink. But what I would do was I would ride by the meeting, and I would look at the people, and I said, mm-mm. I'd ride through the parking lot and look at them in my Lincoln Tahoe car. Hey, I'm high caliber, you know what I mean? A drunk is a drunk, no matter what, you know what I mean? A drunk is a drunk, people. You promise a drunk is a drunk. And all these other people, no. But anyway, I'm not of that caliber, you know. This is what I'm saying, I'd go back home, but I wouldn't drink. So finally, I got up enough courage. Now, that was the guy that kept me out the meetings. I saw that guy on the parking lot every time, and I said, I don't know. And that's the guy that I got a lot of, I mean, you know, he had a lot of information for me when I was a newcomer. But anyway, I finally got up enough courage. I went, my first meeting was a speaker meeting on a Sunday about this time in Atascadero. It was the first Atascadero speaker meeting that they had. It was a new meeting. I walked in. I didn't see anybody. I sat down. They were saying things to me, and I wasn't paying no attention to anybody. But anyway, I'm sitting there, and then within 5 minutes, see, I had a lot of fear in me. I knew I was going to go back to drinking. I'd done it several other times, so what's going to make this one different? So I think I tried out this Alcoholics Anonymous because they told me I had to attend 3 meetings a week, and I had to submit the random urine test, and they told me I had to get a sponsor. And I had to sign by every one of those, and I had to sign at the bottom, and they signed it. So they, questions they asked me, this is what they asked me, the 3 people that were there, this is what they asked me. They said, "Do you realize you need help?" I wanted to get the hell out of there. I said, "Yes." They say, "Do you want help?" All lies, you know what I mean? Yes. They say, "Are you willing to help yourself?" I said, "Yes." Anything say yes to get the hell out of that place. And they say, "Well, if you will help yourself, we will help you." That's important to me. Me helping myself. I didn't know what I was saying. But anyway, they gave me this contract to sign. First was 3 AA meetings and submit the random urine test and get sponsor. I read the other ones. They were just nothing. So they asked, "Any other questions?" I said, "Yes." "What's the sponsor?" One of those smart behind said, "Go to AA, you'll find out." Anyway, I walked into my first AA meeting within 5 minutes. They read chapter 5. They got to the 3rd step, didn't know nothing about no steps. Made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as we understood. Bingo. Barney Bush. Desire to take a drink. Come. Within 5 minutes. You know when chapter 5 was read? Probably within 5 minutes of me. 3rd step. And here I am, that card of my understanding. I'm stuck on that guard of my understanding because on my job, the librarian retired. They put me in the library to run the library in the prison. Somebody dropped the big book in the book drop. It was not a textbook. I took the big book and I put it on my desk. And inmates are coming in talking about, well, you know anything about DOW and Dr. Bob and all that? What you want, you know? But anyway, I decided after that book was there for a while, I would take it home. And I used to sit out back in my RV, and I used to open that book. And I know that God of that understanding was there somewhere, and I didn't want to ask anybody about this God of my understanding in that meeting. You know, pride. I don't even want to talk to y'all. Y'all ain't got nothing to offer me. I want to get home. I went home after the meeting, got my ladder out, went to the top of the garage, found that big book, went into my, because I was looking for that little laminated card with the serenity prayer on it, tradition, and the preamble on it. Some of you guys are aware of that. I knew that God of my understanding was on that. Knew nothing about chapter 5. I went to the top, went back in my RV, opened that big book. That was that laminated card. I read that. Man, it was almost like the presence of God was in that RV with me. The desire to take a drink was lifted. I looked down. That book was on page 25 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. The first complete sentence I read in there says, so many want to stop but cannot. Tears. That was me. And then upon it out, he said, there is a solution. Calipers. Man, what is this? I mean, tears are flowing. And then I went on to read about the self-searching, the level of pride. And, you know, deep and effective spiritual experiences I went on to get. And I'm like, wow, man, this is it. And then it went on to down to my, the central fact of our lives is the absolute certainty that I've created in our hearts and our life in a way that indeed, the adjective, and indeed miraculous. I'm like, man. And man, I went on to read, man, and then I got to the bottom. And they say, if you're alcoholic like we are, there's no middle of the road solution. I had two alternatives. It was constantly blocking out intolerable situations, which I was doing to seek spiritual help. That was it. Didn't like the people in the first meeting, couldn't wait to get back to the next meeting. I went back to the meeting. I didn't like the people so much because I had my God and I had my big book. And I don't need y'all. That's why I kept going to meetings. I mean, I could have just signed the little card they gave me and faked it out or whatever, you know what I mean? So, and I ain't going to no three meetings a week like they told me. I'm going to two and three meetings a day. And I don't want nobody talking to me, so what I would do was I would wash the coffee pot. Y'all get on out of here and leave me alone. I didn't even know I was being a service to y'all. So I started washing the coffee pot, you know, and then one day, I don't know how long I had been there, but I used to make this statement when I would leave out the house. I wouldn't drink. I'm back in the house now. I'm not drinking. I don't have nothing to cover up. I'm cool, man. I'm cool, you know? So I'd leave out the house, and I would go out the door, and I would always tell my wife, I said, well, I guess I'll go over here and talk to these stupid people. Listen to these stupid people again. And she said, you're supposed to go three meetings a week. You're leaving out here two and three times a day, and you always come with them stupid people. What's with that? I went in the driveway, put my key in the ignition, and I said, oh, my God. Why did I say that? Why are these people are so stupid? I'm taking the inventory already. Ain't never done the 10 shelf. Why am I saying these people are so stupid? And I keep coming back when I don't have to come back. So I kept coming back. Didn't like some of the things that was said to me, man. Because when I share, man, I was on a pink cloud. And, yeah, pink cloud, you know. I'm not cutting anybody down, but because maybe it kept me sober or whatever. But you had them old grouchy summer girls around there when I first came in. People are nice now, alcoholics and others. Here come Mr. Serenity talking about spiritual awakening, and he ain't even done a step. He don't even know he ain't done the first step. I just walked on by. Here come Mr. Pink Cloud, and you know, every now and then I say, I ain't no pink cloud, I say the whole damn sky is pink. Then it got so rugged, man, it got bad. I had to call one guy over in the corner. I tell him, look here, let me tell you one. Away from everybody, because they were ganging up on me. I said, look here, let me tell you one, dump. If you keep messing with me, I will drive your aunt to drinking. That guy ain't saying nothing to me since. You know what my sponsor told me? My sponsor was great. He's the one that walked over and told me I need to start doing the steps and everything. But my sponsor told me, I said, do you know so-and-so said something? He said, I'll tell you what. He said, you listen to what he say, but stay away from that SOB. But my sponsor was a good sponsor. My sponsor finally walked up to me one day and said, you need to start doing the steps. I had no idea to do the steps. He says, you need a sponsor. I said, well, will you be my sponsor? He says, I don't know. Meet me at the coffee shop. Yes. And I go all the way down to the coffee shop. What the hell does he know? Blah, 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 blah. And he in the coffee shop sitting down just cool, calm, and collective, you know what I mean? So the first thing he tells me, he says, well, it's one thing about it, Al. He says, you don't have to do, you've already done the first, second, and third step. I said, well, how do you know? You know, I'm like, smart ass, how do you know? He says, I listen to you share. He says, you need to think about doing the fourth step. I said, okay. Well, a couple of weeks later, I asked him about the fourth step. Because I was hearing all this stuff about, man, I'm telling you, newcomers especially, don't let it turn you away. People tell me they fired their sponsor. What the hell? I still have the same sponsor after 18 years. I'm not bragging. It might seem like I'm bragging, but people, I'm happy to be sober. I'm not bragging. You know what I mean? I still got those negative things in me or whatever, those shortcomings and defects of character and stuff like that, but I'm working on it, and I'm a lot better in life now. I'm not bragging, people, but I'm telling you, if you come in here and you work this program and you put as much effort to it as you did, as I did drinking, you get some beautiful results, because I got drunk every time as much effort as I put in drinking. People, I was a drinker. I love to drink. I come in here and I got into Alcoholics Anonymous. I start getting in the big book, and like I say, hey, everybody do whatever they want to do. I got a God of my understanding that I don't understand sometimes, and I realize I don't have to understand everything. I don't have to understand the behavior of other people. And people really, my understanding is an understanding. I didn't know that. And I come in here and I'm pointing fingers at people and saying, well, she did this and she did this and the other. I listened to a speaker in Yosemite. I was early in sobriety. He was talking about how he was telling his sponsor, well, she did this and she. He said, his sponsor just said, we often put ourselves in a position to be taken advantage of. And we do it. I even do it today. I didn't have to offer to help somebody. I didn't have to offer to do this, and I could have said no. You know? People are people. I believe God put us here on this earth to learn from each other. So you have your little bad habits. I prefer you to have good habits. You have good habits, I see more good than bad. And if it's bad, I make good out of it. I tell you, I had 16 months of sobriety, and I saw my brother, well, I didn't see him, but I heard they were telling me how bad he was dying from liver failure. And they told me how he died, because he was in Texas, and I went back two times trying to get him into the program, but he never did make it, but they were telling me how sad it was at the end. He died. I don't want to die like that. I know I'm going to die, but I don't want to die like that. You know, so I just have to take these bad things that happen, or whatever, in everyday life or whatever, I have to have some balance. I have, you know, I have to, you know, the anger, the worry, the doubt, the fear, they're all there, people. These are natural instincts that we have. But if we work these steps and work this program and get to here and fellowship with each other, we learn to manage them if you truly want to. That's if you want, willing. If you're willing to, you know? And I'm willing to, and I still want to do it. I have been through things, and I'm going to tell you something, and I'll be very brief. There are reminders, like I told you, that last drink and my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, I want to remember. I was reborn, like the big book says. I was reborn, you know. I'll always remember that. I mean, you know, what we can do. I mean, we can get this program down. We could go to Tibet or wherever, go to the mountaintop and meditate and pray and do all kind of things and start levitating or whatever and still can drink. Isn't that amazing? The only guarantee that I have is don't go into that liquor store and open some alcohol and drink it. It's simple, isn't it? Don't drink, you won't get drunk. Don't drink, you won't lose your sobriety date. You can go out there and do anything you want to, but if you don't drink, you won't do anything. Life is good. That's simple. You know, we come in here, I try to make the big book talks about logic, reason, and think it through, logic, reason, examine the evidence of your senses and to make, draw conclusions. It says, common sense being uncommon. I come in here and start using some common sense, and that's uncommon. That book is full of some good stuff. Do those steps if you can. I'm not going to tell you to do them, but I advise you to do them. This is my experience, strength, and hope, and this is what I've gotten out of this program. You know. And what can I say? We're here to support each other. I'm not here to turn my back on anyone. Well, like I was telling you, I've learned not to discriminate over the years because when I was raised in racism, I was discriminated so much against. It was ignorant. I have a loving God. The one they talk about in the second tradition, ultimate authority, that's who I have. You have a choice to have who you want. And even the big book gives you some recommendations like higher power, father, principal, director. And then the big book, it tells you, we talk about reading the big book and then it tells you, at the end it tells you, we only know a little. More will be revealed, people. I'm a living example. I love it. I love you all here. And I want to thank you all for listening to me. I hope I wasn't boring. I hope you got something out of it. But if you didn't, I got a lot out of it. How's that?